over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
Amazing. They're pretty amazing.
Tough cookies.
Yes, this is the toughest, most tenacious, fearless animal on the planet. Yes. I would...
What can they teach us?
They, reading the stories on these guys is hilarious. Like, they pick fights with everything. I even read them picking fights with rhinos and elephants.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's been documented. And lions.
It's like an elephant, just squish them, but they probably...
Many species are in crisis and need your help.
They're doing okay.
Yep. The
population's in decline, like most mammals.
It's trending downwards, but right now the IUCN is least concerned about them.
Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
All right, welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Angie, I am like so fired up again today. I'm just really fired up.
Oh, this is a fun one.
Yeah, okay. I'm not fired up over anything bad. I'm fired up about the animal we're talking about today, and that's the honey badger.
Yeah, I'm more just happy. I giggled a lot.
Yeah.
I giggled a lot reading and discussing this honey badger with you.
These guys, I love them. It's like one of my top five. Elephants are my babies and horses are up there. These guys are just, anytime I see anything about them, I just crack up.
I was never drawn to them. I never worked with a species like them or anything. But I have to say I have a newfound respect for them because they are...
amazing. They're pretty amazing.
Tough cookies.
Yes. This is the toughest, most tenacious, fearless animal on the planet.
Yes.
I want someone to find me another animal that's as rough and tough as these guys.
Well, I don't have any experience with them, and I always like to joke that, and it's not really a joke, but during my tenure at the zoo, out of all the animals I worked with, the one that I was probably the most fearful of was the male rooster.
Yes.
And I ran from him a few times, and I'm not even kidding. I always joked, I was like, if he ends up killing me, throw me in the pit rooster. With something else to look a little more tough than that. But I have to say that this honey badger is much more scary than a male rooster.
Male rooster. And it's like, we're sitting here talking about how smart animals are, and then you wonder about chickens, and you're like... are much up there.
Hey, now.
They're pretty smart.
They're definitely trainable.
Yes,
so,
that's true.
They like treats, so that's fun.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Yeah, so the honey badger, I look at pictures of these guys, and they just crack me up. So, we're going to have fun. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about these special animals today.
And hopefully you're going to learn a lot. I know I did.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like I said, newfound appreciation about physiology and evolution.
No, yeah, it's so fun to... And again, that's why, you and I last week were talking about, our last episode, talking about being kids and learning all this new stuff. And it's fun to be able to focus on an animal and go, okay, what can we cover in an hour? What are some of the hot topics that we should talk about with these guys? And we'll cover them all today. I think with the honey badger, if nobody's ever seen one, they need to Google or look at one. I mean, obviously, in the show episode, we'll have a picture of a honey badger up. But just to give you an idea, if you're just listening and you don't have an idea what they look like, they're about a medium-sized dog, smaller dog.
40 to 50 pounds.
Yeah, they're 25 to 35, okay. Not quite that big.
See, in my mind, they're already big.
I know. You think they're huge and scary, but they're actually not that big. And for an animal that... almost dominates Africa because nobody really messes with it. They're not that big. So they're 13, 14 kilograms. So you got to throw in the metric. They stand only about 10 inches at the shoulder. So not even a foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
But length, they're about 2.5 feet or 60 centimeters. So again, not huge.
Not huge. No.
They're not huge. They look big on film, I guess. I don't know.
maybe.
But they're like saying, they're not big, but they're big in attitude.
Huge.
That is where these animals stand out. Like nothing really messes with them. And they kind of look like, I don't know, like when the patterning, and it makes sense because they're related to skunks, and we'll get into the lineages, but they have a top white coat with some gray and black hairs in there, but it's mainly white around the crown. So it kind of stretches to their eyebrows back. So they have this white all the way down and then over their tail. And then their sides are sometimes white, light white, and then black underneath. Now, that's going to vary on the species, too. But typically, when we see honey badgers, white on top, black underneath is what we see. So that's kind of giving you a visual of them. they reading the stories on these guys is hilarious. Like, they pick fights with everything. I even read them picking fights with rhinos and elephants.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's been documented. It's and like, lions.
It's like an elephant just squish them, but they probably run because they're like, I'm not going to mess with this thing.
I think the animals all understand that this thing is not to be messed with.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. Some of the cool stuff that we're going to cover is they're impervious to venomous snakes.
Yes, that is something that I learned and was so fascinated, being the physiology dork that I am. I instantly, you know, had to find out how can they eat a king cobra, one of the most poisonous snakes in the world. Right. And the worst case scenario, as they're chowing down on it, they might pass out for a couple hours, like a little cat
they
nap.
They sleep it off, They sleep it off.
And then they pop right back up and keep eating it.
Yeah. It's like, whatever. I mean,
unbelievable.
Reading stuff that arrows can't pierce their skin.
No.
Machetes can't pierce their skin. I mean, obviously guns could, which is horrible to think about. But like bees, no problem.
Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, bees. And we'll talk about how they earn their name, honey badger. And what's also amazing about these guys that I really loved learning about this week is how smart they are. And I thought it played well into what you and I have been talking about the last few weeks or episodes as far as how intelligent creatures really are. And I know dolphins are up there, but man, these honey badgers must be not far behind.
Well, they're doing pretty well for themselves. And they've figured out how to get along in this modern day society for the most part and do really well and be, you know, not necessarily notoriously the king of the jungle, but kind of the prince of the jungle.
Lions don't mess with them. They chase off lions. Anybody listen to this episode and you really want to learn more, I promise you is well worth the hour of your life, but go Google Honey Badger Mayhem and watch that hour video. I was dying laughing. It was hilarious.
I didn't watch the hour long video, but some of the outtakes and of course the viral video, the crazy nasty ass honey badger one.
Yeah,
it's from 2011, which was overdubbed.
Yeah,
so funny. I mean, I was cracking up, and then just not even watching videos, just reading some of the stuff and some of the comments that people make. That have worked with them and the researchers that have been studying them in Africa. And they're little balls of personality.
Let's put it that way. They are. That's what they're great. And so my favorite honey badger on Earth is this honey badger called Stoffel.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a funny name.
Yeah. And he's in Honey Badger Mayhem, the star of Honey Badger Mayhem. His owner, and it's funny because reading a paper this week, one of the first things they quoted from a paper published in 1900, you know, natural world, it was, you know, honey badgers make great pets. They're wonderful, entertaining animals. Yes. And then I watched this video and the owner he rescued Stoffel. So Stoffel was someone's pet, couldn't take care of it, obviously.
Surprisingly.
So took him to this rescue rehabilitation center and this guy adopted it. He's like, okay, I'll take care of him. He calls Stoffel the pet from hell. oh my God, I'll quickly recap.
There's going to be a lot of giggles in this episode, guys.
It's a story worth telling. Is the first enclosure he had, he got Stoffel a girlfriend, thinking that would kind of chill him out. And it was Hammy, was his girlfriend. Well, that didn't. So him and Hammy and Stoffel were just two peas in a pod, and they just wreaked havoc.
Oh, I couldn't imagine. So double trouble.
Yes, totally. So in the video that shows them, Hammy and Stoffel working together, he had these double latches, and it was like Stoffel was on the bottom, like pushing just right, and it was like, meh, 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 and Hammy was climbing, and it was almost like Stoffel was telling him, okay, get that lock, and then it was like, meh, 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 and then go up and get the other lock, and they worked together to open this gate to escape.
So teamwork.
Yes, teamwork. And then, I mean, so that level of intelligence to do that.
That's pretty high up there.
Then he just was like, fine, I'm going to build you this enclosure and stick you in here, you know, with these straight walls and everything. So he builds this enclosure and you know, being an ex-zookeeper, you kind of probably can understand this. You know, looking at the trees, there was trees kind of here, you know, near the ledge, which was dumb because animals climb, and Stoffel climbed right up, broke a branch down and climbed right out. That was easy. So then this owner's like, fine, takes out all the trees. Stoffel went and dug up huge rocks.
Yeah, they're big time diggers.
Big diggers, but dug up all these big rocks and rolled them over to the edge and built himself a little ledge and jumped out.
Really?
Yes. So then he's like, fine, Stoffel. I'm taking all the rocks out. Digs out all the rocks. Then Stoffel's like, fine. So Stoffel started rolling mud balls and made this mud ball wall.
Jumped out.
This guy wakes up in the middle of the night thinking they're getting broken into, and it's Stoffel who would. They're like, when he breaks into the house, you just let him do his thing because you cannot stop him or you're going to die.
Oh, my word. You know?
And it's just like, oh, the owner and his wife, they're like, Stoffel! It's like, oh, I would love one as a pet, but no, thank you.
No, thank you.
Not a proper pet, but Mr. Stoffel and his girlfriend, Hammy, are just, oh, my God. It was just so funny.
Wrecking mayhem.
Yeah, so he finally just put in an electric fence at the top, and that now Stoffel hates him. He's like, Stoffel hates me because
he finally outsmarted him. Finally,
But he told us a couple stories about how Stoffel dug out and went and harassed the lions. Round one went to the lions, like Stoffel mauled him. Round two went to the lions. Stoffel almost got killed.
Sure.
So he was like, I gotta say, you know, I gotta protect this animal and all my other animals. So the rambunctious honey badger, where are they from, and where are they ranging today? I guess I could put up front that conservation status, you know, I know we're going to kind of cover it at the end, but they're doing okay.
Yep.
The population's in decline, like most mammals.
It's trending downwards, but right now the IUCN is least concerned about them.
Right, so they're not...
But it should be noted that they are a hard population to tag and study because of their very large home ranges, especially for males.
Yeah, huge.
And also they're... often nocturnal. They do have some diurnal patterns. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the counts they have, they don't know how representative that is.
Right. So it's kind of hard to an animal study, but they think they're doing okay.
Yeah.
But still in decline.
Right. And like, populations are fragmented, of course, because of people living places borders and life. And
fences. I mean, they can probably get through some fences. But I didn't know this. I thought, you know, when I thought honey badger, I thought sub-Saharan Africa, you know, below the Congo. I didn't realize they ranged up all the way up into almost northern Africa and then over into Arabia, up into Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, India.
Yeah, Chris, that was really fascinating to me too. I just assumed Africa, you know, central southern Africa. But it just goes to show how they're able to adapt to their environment and how tough they are. You want me to live in a desert? Fine. You want me to live in a mountain? Fine. You want me to live in the forest? Fine.
Yeah. Yeah, they live in everything.
They can handle it, which is probably one of the reasons why they have been able to do okay so far.
Right, and not be, you know, totally decimated. But like you said, they're, if you look at their current versus old habitat, that definitely there's some fragmentation there. Mm-hmm. Especially in Arabia, where I read some studies like in Jordan and Yemen and that part of the world, you know, they're kind of, the populations are fragmented. But still doing okay in Africa, it seems like.
So, Chris, speaking of their native range,
right.
An interesting story that I came across was that honey badgers have been spotted in Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
There's actually stories of them wrecking havoc there and potentially having man-eating badgers. And a lot of that's been exaggerated and whatnot. But in the mid-2000s, during the British occupation, and they were basically, the locals were basically charging the troops with bringing them in.
Oh, bringing the honey badgers in.
Yeah, bringing them in to cause, you know, kind of mayhem, right? Which is unfortunately what they do. But of course, you know, the British soldiers denied it, and to this day it's never really been proven. Right. But what researchers and scientists, of course, this gained some popular press back in the day. Well, researchers pretty much proved that they were just so versatile that they were able to, you know, not only be in Africa and, like you said, parts of Asia, that they could travel into this desert area and do just fine.
Right, right.
So we may never know the truth about that as a you know, as a strategy, like, but
I'm reading a lot of this stuff, it made me think about raccoons, you know, in North America and how they survive. And when I lived in San Francisco, in the city, I was in the big city a long time ago, past life. And one night I wake up and I hear something in the backyard and I look out and there was a family of raccoons rummaging through my dog food. I'm like, a whole family of raccoons in the middle of the city. I was astonished. I was like, how do they survive in this city, you know, with all just homes and buildings and
stuff? You kidding me? They do great in the city. Yeah. They can go dumpster diving.
Right. So I was very surprised, you know, way back in my early 20s. So the honey badger is part of this mustelid or mustelae family. And what's interesting about them is a lot of physiologists or naturalists think they're more related to weasels than they are actual badgers.
Yes, that's what was my understanding of it, which we think of, we have, you know, badgers here in North America. Mm-hmm. But yes, looking more at their physiology, mm-hmm. and their structures, that they're
more like a weasel or mm-hmm. a ferret, mm-hmm. more so than a badger. But I think the naturalists in the late 1700s, when they started describing all these species, that they saw, oh, it looks like a badger, so it became a badger.
Right.
When in actuality, it's not. But it's Mellivora capensis.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'm practicing.
That sounds nice. Really good.
Mellivora.
Where's our clap capensis button? Clap, yeah. Clap, clap.
I just practiced that all night. So of the honey badger, so that's a honey badger scientific name. Of them, there's about 10 subspecies, and not a lot of differences. But what was cool, though, I did read the one in Congo, which is weird, because I would have thought maybe the ones in India or something would be different coloration. The ones in the Congo are almost full black. There's really no white in there. So that subspecies in that part of Africa, so I don't know, more of the rainforest.
Jungle, maybe.
Right. Yeah. They're more black. The ones that live in Nepal, you know, as far away as that, in the mountainous regions, they have like a thicker undercoat, more woolly.
For the cold weather.
Right. They to survive that. But other than that, not a huge amount of differences physiology-wise. And then this family of mustelids is our badgers, weasels, otters,
mm-hmm.
the martens, the minks, and then the wolverines, another one that we always kind of forget about. And I was like, oh, we have to do an episode on wolverines at some point.
Absolutely.
Next couple years. Yeah, you are a Michigan girl, so.
Well, and my Michigan heritage.
You're Michigan State.
So I can't say that I love the wolverines, because right. that's the University of Michigan.
Right.
I'm an ag girl. Mm. I was Michigan State, and we're the Spartans.
Right.
However, wolverines are tough, and they are cool. I don't believe there's any in Michigan anymore, though. Just,
right.
Unfortunately.
Just up there, got pushed out, mm-hmm. and up in Canada, maybe. Mm-hmm.
But they're very tough.
Right. That's what I thought of when I was thinking about honey badgers. I was like, wolverines.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really tough animals.
Although I think Michigan State did beat Michigan this year, so.
Anyway.
Go green.
There you go. So this pretty big family. It's, you know, all different. The skunks are part of this too. And then the honey badger is just its own subfamily.
Okay.
So it's not part of a badger family or a weasel family or anything like that. It's just its
own lineage.
Right, own genus.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverines are own genus too. So pretty interesting. Going back to evolution, I don't know how much of this is interesting to listeners or not. You know, again, that big explosion 50 million years ago. The interesting part about this, though, was the mustelids are the largest family in Carnivoria, or carnivores, basically.
Okay.
Carnivores. Even though honey badgers are omnivores, the carnivore family, they're wrapped into that. They're actually the most diverse of any, which I thought was pretty interesting. They can all trace back their long-distance relatives to this thing that was called a miacid. It was just a really weird-looking animal that was like cat-like, bear-like, hyena-like is how I...
Science-fiction-like.
Right. Like just really, really funky-looking. So the miacids about 50 million years ago was old world, you know, Asia, Europe, that they evolved in. And then the mustelids, and again, not like... horses or some of these other species where we have a lot of evolutionary history, not a lot on these guys. They can't, with as far as going honey badger, there's five phases. So second phase is where they start to diversify about 11 million years ago. So this is where the first otters and badgers.
Okay, so similar in size.
Right.
No giant.
No. There's just a bigger one that's okay. coming up, but not huge. Not mm-hmm. like these massive saber-toothed cats that are like as big as a horse.
Right.
Third phase starts slowing down as far as the diversification up to about 5 million years ago. Then the fourth phase, where we really had a lot of climate change. It was interesting reading about this too, that it was actually 2 to 3 degrees C warmer,
uh-huh.
but less carbon in the atmosphere. So that's like what we're battling now. That's what's causing the Earth to get warmer. Whereas it is normal for the Earth to get warmer, just not under these conditions.
With this much carbon in
there. Right. That we're actually causing it. It's not a natural cycle. Gradual cycle. It's a rapid warming of the Earth because we've dumped so much carbon in the atmosphere. Anyways, that was kind of cool that there was some changes there where they start to diversify again. And this is where we see like the honey badger emerging about 3 million years ago. And then during the Ice Age, 10,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
is when they finally were kind of finalized. Now, you were talking about the large... honey badger or large mustelid.
There in my mind, it's large.
Yeah. So there was this wolverine or weasel type thing called a megalictus. And it's about a very large dog, about 130-pound dog or 60 kilogram was about the size. So, you know, pretty big.
Like a Newfoundland
or something. Yeah, but if a honey badger was that big, oh my God, I would die.
Run.
But yeah, like I was joking about bull sharks. No, these guys would tear your face off quick.
Well, actually, and I'm sure we'll get to that, they don't usually go for the face.
No, we'll get to that. Yes, here, pretty quick. You want to tune into that one because they, oh my God, my legs hurt. So, you know, just some mitochondrial DNA stuff. They've traced these guys and they are related to the American badger, European Asian badger, and the others, the weasels and things like that. So this is where we get all that stuff. And so just quick, the honeybees is what I said in the past episode when my wife was traveling around. She went the entire circle of South Africa checking in with doing a honeybee research project for 2 weeks, and she said the beekeepers, the headache for them was honey badgers.
Yes.
That they just come in and destroy hives. Each hive's worth about R1,000. And in the United States, for us, you know, honeybee hives, when we kept some, we sold ours for $250 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
So they're worth quite a bit per hive. So when you have this honey badger coming in and instances of destroying 60 hives in one night, to not just get at the honey, but they like, when we get to nutrition, they like to eat the larva.
Right. That's
really what they're, the protein
they're going for.
Right. So it really, you know, it's a lot of headaches for the beekeepers.
Lots of headaches. And the same thing for poultry, right? People,
yeah, chickens. And
chickens.
Maybe that rooster that you love so much, you could sacrifice.
Right. Oh, yeah. He would not win against a honey badger. No. And so there's definitely like more conflict with that. And they, I think, unfortunately, or rightfully so, perhaps, get this notorious, you know, that they're a pest and that they're a nuisance and that they perhaps either need to be done away with
eradicated or
poisoned. And we'll talk a lot more about that later on. That's historically how it's been. There's good news on the front to report with bees as far as non-governmental groups working with the locals and teaching them how to basically badger-proof their hives.
Okay, and I was going to get this to maybe, sorry, not to take away some of your thunder and the behavior, but Stoffel.
No, please do.
So there's this gentleman in Mr. Guy Stubbs. This guy is a saint. Like, I would love to meet him. He was trying, in part of the Honey Badger Mayhem video, he was making these honey badger proof hives.
Mm-hmm.
So his first experiment, he stuck this hive on top of this tree with no bark to see how the badger would overcome it.
Because they're great climbers.
Easy. Climbed right up it. Stoffel's like...
They were laughing.
I mean, Stoffel, I think, is a little overweight because he was like... after climbing up, but he did. He got up there, no problem. His claws got into the knots and stuff of the tree. So he's like, okay. And he was just kind of doing a test to see. He didn't expect much. But then his next experiment was this large table with these, you know, straight legs. And he's like, there's no way they can climb up it. And so Hammy and Stoffel tried to climb. And finally, I think it was Hammy. She found like little knots where the tables connect. And she was able to grab on that with a claw and pull herself up. And the next thing she knows, she's up there. And Guy's like, oh my God, what am I going to do with these guys?
Oh my word.
So yeah, they are incredible.
They're definitely a force to be reckoned with. And that's, you know, that's what these local farmers, and I'm a little bit more familiar with in South Africa, that's what they're dealing with, the farmers and the apiculture. So, but I think what's happened more recently in 2011, I briefly mentioned, instead of kind of being this pest, their nastiness and their amazing physiology and their toughness was showcased in a documentary, but then spliced and dubbed into this crazy nasty ass honey badger video.
I could have watched it.
And
since we're done.
It's so funny, guys. If you've never seen it, go to it. You probably have seen it because it has over 80 million views or more and growing. And so I think it's given people a little bit more. I like the spin on it because it shows that they are tough and they are intelligent. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. Right. You know, we should love diversity, things that are different than us. I mean, the fact that, a lion tries to grab them and their neck's so loose and their skin's so loose, like it doesn't penetrate their skin. Right. So there's some really cool physiology going on there. And I think it's given people new respect because now if you just Google the honey badger, there's, you know, a lot more sites talking about their physiology and kind of, you know, holding a trophy to the fact that they are so tough, nasty ass and badass. Yeah, yeah. So I think that's really cool. And I think that's where you got to love like the social media and kind of comedy and, you know, edutainment or education and entertainment mixed together. And now people are trying to meet in the middle. I think at least some of the research I did in South Africa of trying to, okay, we don't want to, you know, poisoning in them has been a very common way to deal with them, but they're trying to think outside the box of how we can work and live alongside them.
Right. And not just kill them. And that's kind of part of that documentary that made me think, and Angie alluded to it earlier, was a farmer, pig farmer, who called out, he trapped one instead of just killing it. He trapped it and called out the rescue guy to come out and get it. And and he said, you better watch out because those things will go straight for your bleep and nuts.
Yes.
So this
cojones, testicles, whatever you want to call them.
They, if you are a male and you see a honey badger, run. I mean, even female, I would run too, but run and don't run till you die because if they get a hold of you, they
go, don't drop. Don't fall down.
Yeah. They go for the nuts and they tear them out. And, you know, again, getting a little bit before the nutrition, there have been documentation of Cape Buffalo ripping the testicles off of
Cape
Buffalo.
Which is one of the big five in Africa.
Huge.
And so Cape Buffalo, for those of you that don't know, hopefully we'll get to cover it because it's a really cool big five animal in Africa, is they have horns and each horn weighs about 25 pounds.
25 pounds. So their rack's about 50 pounds.
About a 50-pound rack. And like you said,
the honey bulls are like 2,000 or 3,000 pounds, probably 4,000 pounds, and then
they're a force to be reckoned with themselves. And so you're telling me that a honey badger,
25-35 pound honey badger, running up, ripping off the nuts,
oh my,
of the testicles of a big bull.
It's so ridiculous.
It's just, and then waiting for that guy to die and bleed out, like horrible, painful death, and then go eat it or try to eat it.
I shouldn't be laughing, but it's just, I mean,
it's ridiculous. So if you're a male, just run.
Well, isn't there some documentation of some of the researchers I came across said when they're filming them and trying to get some of their natural wildlife behaviors that they actually wear
cups.
Yeah, like jock strap cuff things.
Oh God, I would have a cage around me.
Yeah.
Like I would be in full metal armor.
It's like it's one of those decisions. So if my job requires me to wear a cup and I'm not a sports athlete, maybe I want to think again about my job.
It's like I really will love these guys. Like I said, the pet from hell. No, thank you. I don't want something that will rip my nuts off.
No, just, gosh.
Oh, my God. These guys are too much. Yeah, so wildlife photographers wear cups when they cover them because they are dangerous.
They are no joke.
Yeah. So some of the physical traits of these guys. Their nose, they smell. So, you know, again, being a physiologist, and we kind of understand how some of this works, but they almost have as good of smelling as dogs.
Wow.
They really can. So that's one of the things they do is they dig a lot, burrow a lot.
Right, because they can smell into the ground. The grubs smell and out. Stuff. Yeah.
Right. They eat
lizards,
everything.
Scorpions, cobras. So,
right. Yeah. And I thought it would be interesting, just kind of really quick, why do they, so sense of smell, you know, physiology-wise, why do animals have a better sense of smell than us? And we have a good sense of smell. We just, not as good as, a beagle or a hound dog, a bloodhound,
not
or something
even close,
like that.
Right.
And it just has to do with receptors in the top of your nose. When an odor comes in, binds to a receptor, and, you know, I'm starting to think, because we do talk about receptors in other episodes, I always like to describe a receptor as a lock and key.
Yeah, I think it's a great description.
So you stick the key in the lock and turn it, it turns the receptor on, so a certain smell will bind to a certain receptor. That signals the brain. The brain interprets.
Yeah, there's like downstream effects from that. Right, the cascade. That, then I think of a waterfall, like a cascade. One thing goes to another, goes to another, goes to another until...
Yeah, the brain, however the brain works, which we still don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Miracle how it works. But that it interprets the smells. And so different receptors work in combination with taste, you know, for things that are sweet or sour or really nasty smelling or whatnot. That's kind of just the basics of how smell works.
So they have more receptors.
Much, much more. So receptors they have is like 300 million versus a human who only has like 6 million.
Oh, wow. So
a ton.
A lot more.
Yeah, a lot more.
A lot more.
Like 50 times more. So their nose is much, much more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can pick up odors that we couldn't.
Right, because as much as I try, I cannot sniff that gecko out of the ground.
No. No, but they can.
I can't even figure out what in my car smells like it died.
Yeah.
And it's probably a old milk bottle or a Cheerio or who even knows what.
You don't want
kids, guys.
Things just fall. Yeah, they fall.
If you have young kids,
you know,
your life will stink sometimes.
You know. Now, you said about their skin, and this is what's really cool, their physiology, that they can turn their whole body in their skin.
Right.
It's so loose. So when a predator grabs them by the skin.
Which there's video of if you look online.
Yeah, and see that. And they can turn and bite the face. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do. They bite and scratch the face, and they'll destroy the face of the predator. So that's why predators are scared to death of them. Like,
yeah, and the skin is really loose, so for an animal to try to grip them and then puncture, what a lion would be trying to do is very, very hard, and that's why the folklore that a machete can't pierce them or arrows, a dart or arrows holds true, because it's just the skin is so loose, it kind of just bounces off.
Right, and that's probably why Stoffel lived through the second round with the lions, because he did get some wounds, but it wasn't fatal like it should have been. Mm-hmm. A 30-pound badger. Well, Sofel's probably like 50 pounds because he looked a little heavy for any badger. So yeah, so that is one of the cool things physiology-wise is that they can just turn in their skin, you know, and yeah, you got a hold of me, but your face is gone.
Right.
And so that's why they really don't mess with them. Very sharp teeth, you know, again, kind of.
They're carnivores.
Yeah.
Big canines.
So, yep. Strong jaws and then these long claws that are really good for digging.
And climbing.
Things like that, right. And then climbing, yeah. So I talked about, you know, Stoffel and his ability to grip and climb, that they can do that. And then I didn't know this either. They have an anal pouch like a skunk.
Okay. The anal stuff. Yeah. The anal. I mean, I always laugh at stuff to do with butts and butts. You know, and poop and and I love poop. I study poop a lot. But yeah, this was really fascinating.
Yeah, that they're like skunks.
Right.
And it's supposed to be horrendous.
Well, that's the thing. The smell is supposed to be some of the worst you've ever smelled, which just being a curious scientist, I kind of want to smell it.
Rotten carcass.
A small part of me is like, well, how bad? I mean, I know a skunk smell. Right. I know lots of really bad smells. Rotten milk, you know. I know bad smells. And so I'm curious, like, how bad can this be? But it's supposed to be very,
probably make you vomit.
Right.
But it's bad. And, you know, it's like, you know, keeps predators away. So that's one of their defense mechanisms is, hey, you're going to make me mad? Here you go. Smell this. Oh, you're going to bite me? Okay, I'll tear your face off. Right. Oh, if you're a male, don't turn around because you're going to lose your nuts. So
they've got a lot going on to keep people away.
They're crazy. And then one of the last things is, you know, listen, we did the poison dart frogs. We talked about aposomatic because I was like, well, they don't have a coat pattern that's a camouflage. So like skunks, their white back with black undercoat is a warning. It's coloration. Hey, don't mess with me or you're in a world of hurt.
And if you've ever been skunked, you remember that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You're like, I'm not going to mess with that thing with a white stripe down its back. Now, in the wild, they do live hard lives. And there are instances of predators killing them.
There are, yes. Yeah.
So it doesn't mean they're impervious.
But they're usually, they go after cubs, the little ones.
Right, the little ones. Mm-hmm. They're not invincible, but so they only live to be about 7 in the wild, which isn't very long, which is kind of sad because again, when we get to generation interval, it's not short like others, but in captivity, they can live up to be 30.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the sad stuff is half the cubs die before reaching maturity. So again, a hard life. And this was hilarious. I'm talking about generation interval.
Mm-hmm.
Cubs stay with mom for up to 2 years.
Right, which is fascinating because in other badger species, they don't see this.
Mm-hmm.
Cub will stay with mom 3-6 months, whatnot. And researchers that are studying at least the ones in southern Africa basically hypothesize that part of the reason they stay with mom so long is because they have all these badass behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
That they need to learn how to climb trees and dig and kill snakes and all these really unique behaviors that make them tough that aren't, you know,
they're learned.
They're not naturally, you don't naturally go instincts. into a beehive per se.
Right.
Nobody would really think that that's a good idea.
Especially in Africa. Cause, and I don't know if people know this, you know, and when we get to the honeybee at some point in the next few years in this podcast, why African bees are so
Wait, Chris,
dangerous.
Just to back up the bus a little bit.
Should we do it in like
6 months? I was going to say, would Ashley, your wife, want us to wait years to get to the honeybee? I think we should do it probably in the next,
right,
like...
soon. We'll do honeybee soon. I was just, I'm trying to make big promises, but yeah. Once we get settled in New Zealand and she's in her new job, you know, we'll talk about...
She can do the honeybee episode.
Well, she's going to be one of the interviews we do. I told her, I said, I'm going to interview you. It's so funny because... If we go back and forth, I'm like, there's no way I could host this podcast with you because we'd be like each other's throats because she's so smart.
Yes, I can verify that. It's probably better for all, or people will just be cracking up and feeling better about their lives.
I guess.
One or the other.
Because she's so smart. And she's like, that's so wrong. Smart. That's wrong. And I'd be like, shut up.
Walking encyclopedia. Just smile and nod.
Yeah. With you, it's like I could say something stupid. You're like, sure.
Yeah, whatever. As long as it's nice and funny.
So now that I'm on the other side of Earth from Stoffel, I can call Stoffel the ultimate mommy's boy. He is the ultimate mommy's boy. They stick with mom longer than the females.
Mm-hmm.
The boys love mommy. And then when mommy starts to get frisky with another male, that's kind of signaling, hey, it's time to go. But the male, some of the studies I saw or read, the female cubs, like, they're adults, they take off. They're just like, see ya.
Right, they're independent.
Yeah, peace out, I'm gone. You know, bye, mom. The boys, like, hanging around, like, hey, mom. And, like, their territory is very small.
Does that sound like your family at all?
Yeah, probably.
Sounds a little bit like my family. I was like, once I was 18, I was like, peace out.
It's like my brother Joe, he lives near mommy still.
See?
So and he'll listen to this someday. But anyways, Stoffel and all the males, their territories are really central around mom. And then over time, they get kind of pushed out and they get bigger and bigger and bigger into these huge territories we see today. But they are the ultimate, mommy boy.
Well, that leads a little bit really well segments into the behavior, and that is kind of the only time that they're seen together.
Right.
They're a very solitary species in general. Females are solitary. Males are solitary. They come together for a little hanky-panky, and then we got another deadbeat dad.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
deadbeat dads.
They
come in, they breed, and they bail.
So, but
hey, man, they got a lot of girls to go see.
They do. They do take. They
huge
do
territories.
They do service a lot of young honey badger ladies, and but then, like you were saying, the mom and her cub will stay together for a while, and so. Researchers have shown if they see two honey badgers together, that it's most likely a mom and even if it looks big, like you said, a teenage son type deal, unless they're doing the hanky-panky or something, then that's obviously breeding.
Right.
But they, and then in the wild, females typically don't interact. And males will, of course, they're territorial and they use latrines. So like they're where they go to the bathroom. They use to scent mark.
Right.
And it basically helps tell the males, hey, this is my territory. Mm-hmm. You know, don't come across it. But if they do bump, the males do bump into each other, the more dominant one usually just sends a very quick signal to leave me alone. And they don't fight a lot.
Right.
Like, for as
well,
tough...
anything that bites your nuts off.
Yeah, I think they know.
I wouldn't fight.
The subordinate male's like, okay, gotcha. Yeah. And just kind of like puts his head down and runs off. And a lot of, a lot of those pheromones come out in the latrine of like who is the top dog, or not dog, top badger and whatnot. And so that's, just not really an issue. The male might posture basically saying that he's the top badger. But other than that, a really interesting thing too, I briefly mentioned it, is that the males can cover about 500 square kilometers as a territory.
Right, I read that. That's insane.
Which is huge,
200
right?
square miles. I had to go backwards math.
Yeah. So
that's nuts.
That's a lot. And so it's a lot more than any other badgers that they've been compared
to. It's like coast to coast in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're about an hour from each. Yeah, it's about almost the width of Florida.
Right. And so, and females don't. They cover about 100 to 150 square kilometers. And this is research coming out of South Africa.
Right.
So it might different depending on where.
Probably. I mean, again, and that's, I guess it would jump into nutrition too, that the range is going to depend on.
The diet.
Yeah. And density of available foodstuffs.
Right. So therefore, and the males can circle around lots of different females. So they're polygamous. Mm-hmm. They have lots of honeys.
Even the girls, I'm sure.
Lots of honeys. Like you mentioned, they have great smelling, great hearing, poor eyesight. but they also vocalize too as a form of communication. It's not going to be as in-depth like we talked about last week with the dolphin or the vaquita, but they do make some different noises. They say one's kind of like a ka-ya-ya-ya-ya sound. Another one is a male will grunt during mating. And then they also whine, and they can also scream. So if they're being, a lot of times farmers will use dogs to like sniff them out, those brave dogs. But if they see a dog, that they'll scream.
Right.
And they'll scream like a little bear cub. So if you bear with me, I have a sound.
Okay.
And it's kind of just fun to put a sound to a face. So this is a honey badger scream vocalization. So you probably don't, if you hear this sound, run.
It sounds like a primate almost.
It does. It's I don't know if it's an alarm call, but it's probably something similar to like an alarm call of like, you know, it's if you happen to be with a honey badger and you hear this sound,
I would cut my nuts, you know, run.
Right. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200 or what is it? Pass go, collect $200, get the heck out of Dodge. But so yeah, they definitely use a lot of vocalizations when they are together and to communicate too. It's as one of their forms of communication. And then one of the other really neat things that I think it's not necessarily based on their behavior. I always focus each week on the animal we're talking about behavior. But this is actually behaviors based on other animals and association patterns that honey badgers, at least in southern Africa and the Kalahari region, two mammals and five birds have been observed to be associated with the honey badger.
Right.
Honey badger. So these associations with these birds and mammals appear to be a form of commensalism because they're other opportunistic predators, and they'll target in on what the honey badger's after. So the honey badger will dig out some geck, and as they're digging for what, let's just say, a lizard that they're about to eat, or a scorpion, they have some percentages somewhere in some of the research, like 50% of the time or 60% of the time, while they're digging for something, it runs out the other way.
Right.
They quote unquote miss it, right? And that's when another mammal might come in, like a jackal, or some of these birds might swoop down to get this smaller prey. And there's also discussion of a mutualistic or mutualism behavior between the badger and a bird species called a honey guide.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
And so researchers, a honey guide, they say, helps lead them to the honey.
Right.
And there's definitely documentation, most of it anecdotal, but documentation with people of honey guides helping people find honey.
Right.
But the researchers go back and forth if this is really scientifically proven that the honey guide and the badger work together or not. And so they need further research. As far as some of these other birds, like the pale chanting goosehawk or goshawk, that's been confirmed. So it's really interesting that other animals know that these guys are badasses too, right? They're like, you know what? I'm just going to follow the honey badger. They're such amazing diggers.
It's and a little gang.
Yeah, amazing climbers. I'm just going to go, you know, pick it up from them. I don't think there's too much stealing food from a honey badger because they're so darn tough. But, you know, potentially they might be getting, you know, especially some of the leftovers, like the vultures, well, I mean, the jackals. If they try to
eat a Cape buffalo, a honey badger is not going to get very much
exactly,
in one meal.
Exactly.
Come back the next day, and I'm sure some.
Yeah, I just think it's really neat. So, you know, and when we talk about conservation and whatnot, it's been shown through research that these two mammals and five birds kind of depend and
on
need
each other,
needs this guy. Around, guy or girl, because girls are just as tough, probably tougher. Let's be honest.
The boys are bigger.
Darn it, that's true. The boys are much bigger.
Yeah, they're much bigger.
Much bigger. It's they have one of the biggest examples of sexual dimorphism as far as males being larger than females, and that we see here in the animal kingdom or in the mammal in the carnivore family. Yes, and a lot of they need to do all this digging and climbing because they need to eat a lot. Right. And that's what I think you were looking into this
week. Nutrition. Just one last thing with behavior was I found this neat factoid was that they think the reason cheetah cubs can do so well or survive as well as they do is they actually resemble honey badgers. So we were talking a couple podcasts ago about cheetah cubs and the crazy Einstein hair.
Mm-hmm, so
that
cute.
Einstein hair, they think, makes it look like a honey badger. So people, or not people, the other animals see it and go, nope, and they go the other way. And it's just a little cheetah cub.
That's so interesting. Yeah. See, you gotta love research, right? Learning every day.
So yeah, their territories are huge, and I thought it was interesting some of the tracking studies that they did that the males tend to cover about 4 kilometers an hour or a couple miles, 2 to 3 miles a kilometer.
They're busy.
Whereas the females not traveling as fast, 3 kilometers per hour. And then when they have a cub, you think about that too for the females. So yeah, the females are tougher because they actually have to survive.
Right, and interestingly enough too that for their they sleep in dens,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have one home den.
Right.
When they have a newborn cub, they'll keep the same den, right. But all the other ones that don't have cubs on their side, so the adult males and adult females, they're switching dens all the time.
Right.
So they're digging them out, and that's how good a digger they are. They're just like, I'll get a new home. And
right.
It might be a really good life strategy to, if you keep moving your home range, then mm-hmm. people don't necessarily, or predators don't necessarily know where you're at. But I just thought that was interesting. They're expending a lot of energy by doing
right.
that too.
Right,
so
right. Yeah,
I don't moving, think researchers moving really know why.
Right. So as far as nutrition, honey badgers eat almost anything.
They're known as a generalist carnivore, mm-hmm. which means
anything and everything, mm-hmm. garbage, you know, insects, reptiles, meat, anything, birds, rodents, anything, male testicles. so Rocky Mountain oysters would be a favorite of theirs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they are, wow. Again, we talked about their sense of smell, so that's how really they hunt. So it's mm-hmm. not like they're ambush predators or anything, but they do, you know, like we said, dig. For things. So they are a predator,
absolutely,
per se.
Yeah.
That they do eat things that are alive and kill them. Obviously, they love honey because that is part of it. It's not a major part of their diet. Actually, the major part of their diet, or a quarter up to half of their diet, depending on the study you look at, are these venomous snakes.
Sure. So not only do they eat venomous snakes,
yeah.
20 to 50% of the time. Like, we have our morning cup of coffee.
Right.
They have a venomous snake.
Right.
I mean, if the numbers are as high as 50%.
Yeah, at least a quarter, if not up to 50% mm-hmm. of the time, they eat venomous snakes, puff adders, cobras. And again, this is where they're mostly studied in sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier to study them there because they are smaller. But yeah, they love their snakes. And so...
Well, and also nobody else is really going for snakes, so it gives them kind of a neat niche.
Right, right. So it's kind of... And that's, again, when we talk about balance of nature... You know, they are the check to more venomous, you know, less venomous snakes. So, yeah, it's interesting when you look at the how they survive these venomous bites. It's really, they have special properties in their blood. So, again, that's something as a scientist we could probably isolate. I'm sure somebody might be studying it. I don't know. I don't want to try to draw blood from honey badger, but...
Negative Ghost Rider.
Have fun at that knockdown.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, interesting, hedgehogs, mongoose, and even pigs... So the one study I was reading talking about how they can withstand venom.
Right. I found it fascinating. Yeah. I knew mongooses and whatnot. Yeah. I didn't really know about hedgehogs or pigs.
And pigs, yeah. Pigs have some special properties that they also, too. Not quite as well as the honey badger. The study I was looking at is there's a disruption in the receptors. So normal venom would bind and that would end up killing you, whereas that doesn't happen in the honey badgers or some of the other species that they've looked at.
This cub stays with the mom up to 14 months, which is much, much longer than the Eurasian badger, which has been pretty intensively studied. Mm-hmm. And they think, once again, this is to learn all the badassness things to be a honey badger. Mm-hmm. It takes a while. You just don't learn that in a few days,
right?
You gotta learn how to wreck mayhem over multiple months. So
yeah, I think it's tricky, you know, like, okay, how do I survive a bee strike?
Right.
So, you know, and I don't know if I got to finish my bee story about the difference between African and European honeybees, that the African bees, when, so European honeybees, a hive gets attacked, about 30% of the hive will come out to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's nasty,
sure,
but it's not the entire hive. With African hives, it's almost like 80% of the hive empties. That's why they're like so much more aggressive, because their warm pheromone goes out and just they swarm.
Mm-hmm.
So honey badgers can survive. They've saw one up to 1,000 bee stings, you know, again, that thick coats, but there have been instances of honey badgers being stung to death too. So
they're not impenetrable.
Right. Right. So they, again, they are tough, but not invincible. So how can we support honey badgers, Angie? What can we do?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. Once again, currently, you're not going to hear a lot about them being endangered and whatnot, but we do know that their population is declining.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for some of the similar themes that we've talked about in other episodes, but they are often sought after for their body parts, their paws, their skin, their fat, their organs. They're commonly used in traditional medicine.
Mm.
And this is once again because of their reputation of being fearless,
right,
and being tenacious and whatnot. People, I guess, think if they consume these parts, that they will also
get some of the power or whatever. That. Which gotta be so beyond that as a species.
It's such BS, right?
Yeah,
we know
5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But then a more at home issue, especially for what's been studied in southern Africa, is they are prized bushmeat too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but you know, the bushmeat crisis is tough because a lot of the people that live in the area, I mean, they should be able to eat the animals and hunt and whatnot.
To survive, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a really, you know, that's a really complex issue that I think different countries are working to resolve in different ways. In a couple countries, the honey badger has been listed as CITES Appendix 3 in Botswana and Ghana. And what that Appendix 3 basically just says that we need to start observing their trade, and it has to be, the trade has to be, you need permits and certifications in order to do that. But the cool thing about Botswana and Ghana doing this is it sends a message to other countries that, you know, maybe we should get on board too and do this.
Right.
And so I applaud them very much. So, and hopefully, you know, they're recognizing that their population's declining, that we should do something about it.
Right. Or they hit the crisis standpoint. Yeah.
And we touched on a little bit earlier, but they're most often persecuted through either poisons or through steel jaw traps by beekeepers and small livestock farmers. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that is work in progress of how...
And it's one of the big problems, I think, with wildlife. It's wildlife-human conflict. You know, it's not just in Africa, like we talked about with snow leopards in Nepal and Mongolia.
No, we have the problems out here west with wolves and, you know... And
cattle ranchers.
And cattle ranchers. Right. So it's everywhere. And there's no one-fits-all solution. No. But it's definitely, you know, poisoning, you know, that's kind of rough. Like, nobody wants to... To do that. And so one of my organizations of the week is actually focusing on that. And it's a really feel good story. Mm-hmm. And so I went ahead and picked Endangered Wildlife Trust. So you can go to www.ewt.org.za. And what this is the Carnivore Conservation Group of the Endangered Wildlife Trust basically set up what they call the Badger Friendly Initiative.
All right.
Okay. And this is charming because this is such a clever way.
Right.
And this is lots of, you know, ingenious people from probably different backgrounds and different socioeconomic status coming together and being like, how can we help this relationship between the beekeepers, farmers, and honey badgers? And so what they did is they created kind of like workshops and, you know, websites and all these kind of different strategies to inform and assist beekeepers on a one-to-one basis on how to protect their hives.
Mm-hmm.
And they also went out and educated the public about honey badgers, and they wanted to do increase positive initiatives for badgers. And so this picked up some speed and some trends, which we sometimes see with pop culture.
Right.
You know, one person hears about it. And with that, some of the public said, hell yeah. You know what? We love honey, but we don't want honey if the bee farmer's poisoning killing these honey badgers. So then there was a whole movement by this group to basically they have a nationally recognized accreditation mm-hmm. and sticker to mark things as badger friendly logos. Yeah,
so it's on, not on their badger products. Free.
It's not any badger free, right? But it's friendly.
Yeah, that's great.
And saying that these beekeepers and farmers, yeah. you know, whatnot have like either taken classes mm-hmm. or workshops, and they have a whole website that shows people mm-hmm. how to keep badgers like Stoffel.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's done the science behind yeah. it of how to keep these hives 100% honey badger free. And then they can fetch a higher price for their honey
right.
from locally informed public.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyways, if you go there and give, you know, donate them or tell them they're doing a good job. I'm really, you know, proud that the Nature Wildlife Trust, they do a lot of different species
right,
work.
Right.
But they recognize that the honey badger is not endangered yet, like some of the other species they do a spotlight on. But that there is a need for this, right. and that consumers want this.
Right, right, they do.
And it was all formed through education, which right. is a common theme that you and I talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. As far as
it's amazing how economics plays into this, and
people vote with their dollar.
Right, that's what you've been
and
saying.
My so husband and I, we try to do that right. all the time, and really, you know, vote with our dollar. You might not think it makes a difference. Yeah. But it does.
It does. Oh, it makes a huge difference. You know? Oh, yeah. It makes a huge, huge difference.
And then lastly, it's kind of cute. My second organization is, if you want to, for Christmas, you can go to the World Wildlife Fund, mm. which I've highlighted before on this series. But they have, you can either adopt a honey badger kit.
Right.
And you get like a gift of the little stuffed animal right. and all this little fun facts and stuff. So that's a cute little present mm. for any of you honey badger fans out there. But other than that, they also have the ability to adopt a virtual
honey badger.
So I don't, you know, so it's a little cheaper, and I don't, you know, but
won't
I thought
chase me while
it. Sure, but I thought that might be a good one for, you know, for our boys yeah, this Christmas know, or something. So I don't know what exactly that entails because I haven't done it, but I'm trying to think of who that would be the best gift for this holiday season.
I can think of so many funny honey badger shirts I can come up with right now that I can make.
I know, seriously.
Protect your nuts. Yeah. That's the whole title. This is Protect Your Nuts, the Honey Badger.
Seriously. I mean, they are nasty.
They are. They're
in a
great.
Wonderful way. Because,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. They're doing great because they've been able to adapt to mankind.
What nature intended for them, mm-hmm. right? That's what they've mm-hmm. evolved into. And
but they're not, as tough as they are, they're not invincible.
Yes, and at least they're not the size of a horse.
Right, and they're not the size of a horse. and so that's why we're here today talking about them, to talk about all their cool facts right. and their physiology mm-hmm. and that they are mostly invincible,
yeah.
but not entirely invincible. Right. And so we still gotta, you know, even though we're tough and they're tough and we're scared of them, there's a lot of good that they do
right.
and they're really unique creatures, and we've got to be their voice too.
Right. We do. And, you know, our calls for action this week, if you are really enjoying the podcast, you know, you can subscribe. You can go to our Patreon page. It's linked on our website, allcreaturespod.com. You can subscribe. You don't have to be a paying member, but you can at least subscribe. And then you'll get an email when we release an episode or when we post some content that you'll be notified.
It'll get you excited about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then maybe I'll come up with that honey badger shirt, protect your nuts or something. I'll get my friend who's an artist to design something. But, you know, thank you for subscribing. And please give us feedback again. We say this every episode.
Yes, thank you for listening. Yeah, and
we'll see you next episode.
All right. Have a good one.
Right. Bye.
Listen. Learn. Share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.